content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jean Latshaw from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Ladies Magazine. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from various ladies magazines, and we begin with this one from Martha Stewart Living, A New Leaf. Ornamental cabbage may not be a centerpiece staple yet, but consider inviting a few heads to the table. It's lush like a peony, yet much hardier, and the decorative vegetable's bright green leaves make it a natural for St. Patrick's Day. Just mix in delicate blooms to fashion an arrangement as fresh as an Irish spring. And what they did, it said, complement cabbages with flowers in harmonizing hues like the hellebores, ranunculus, and carnations shown here. They're using a carnation that's off-white, kind of a little bit of a green tint to it. From Real Simple, let's unpack your coat closet. If we're going for accuracy, we'll call it an overstuffed coat, shoe, scarf, and assorted nonsense closet. It works hard. Professional organizer Kendra Littlejohn shares tips for giving a jam-packed coat closet a cold send-off. 1. Hold a mid-season audit. How many items in there do you really wear? Pull out anything that hasn't seen the light of day in a while and set it aside for donation to a shelter or thrift shop. Pieces that are ripped or stained should be mended or cleaned. Go to earth911.com, that's earth911.com, to find a nearby recycling center for items that are past their prime. 2. Do some rearranging. Give each family member a section on the rod and hang coats by person from shortest to longest. Everyone gets a set number of coats and has to stick to it. If space is tight, move lighter and off-season stuff to bedroom closets. On the floor, set up a rack or cubbies to corral shoes. 3. Use every inch. No, this doesn't mean to shove in as much as you can. It means to take advantage of open space. Mount hooks on the closet's sidewalls to hold small things like masks, scarves, hats, and bags. An over-the-door hanger with pouches, baskets, or shelves can also create storage out of thin air. The helpers, and they have a few things they recommend, the top shelf of a closet can become the land of never-to-be-seen-again belongings. To avoid this, stash items in sturdy baskets. Label the baskets so you know where things go and can quickly find them again. Theirs is the Bright Room Woven Water Hyacinth Milk Crate from $15 at Target. Over-the-door organizers, not just for shoes. Use one to store winter gear like gloves and earmuffs. Each family member gets their own row. They like the Better Homes and Gardens 24-pocket over-the-door closet shoe organizer from $19 at Walmart.com. And winter shoes track in a variety of fun messes like sludge, salt, and snow. Oh, my. A bamboo shoe rack is durable and easy to wipe down. It's the two-tier bamboo stackable shoe shelf, $40 at the Container Store. From Real Simple, finding friendship. Making new friends as a grown-up is hard, not to mention doing it while raising kids in the White House. In her new book, The Light We Carry, former First Lady Michelle Obama describes how she learned to let her guard down a little at a time. I am fully convinced that you will get further in life when you've got at least a couple of solid friends around you, when you're reliably and demonstratively invested in them and they in you. Moving into the White House, I carried a slight but nagging worry that my friendships might never be the same, that all the relationships important to our family were vulnerable to change thanks to the strange pomp and grandeur that now surrounded us. One of my first encounters with my friend Danielle happened to be in the driveway of the White House when she came to pick up her daughter Olivia from a play date with Sasha. Our two daughters were in the slightly awkward early stages of a new friendship, getting to know each other at school and playing on the same rec league basketball team. I had also spotted Danielle at a couple of school events I'd attended, taking note of the way she hung back in a crowd and appreciating how little interest she seemed to have in meeting me. I was still trying to get used to the idea that as First Lady, I'd become an object of keen interest to others. My presence tended to change the dynamics in a room, not because of who I was, but because of what I was. For this reason, I tended to find myself a little less interested in the people who made a beeline for me, and more interested in those who hung back. At this point, my social concerns were still mostly about our daughters. Anyway, I was thrilled that Sasha had wanted to invite Olivia and a couple of other girls over to spend a Saturday running around the residence and then watching a movie. I had passed much of the morning pretending to do other things while silently hovering on the periphery of their playdate, quietly overcome with emotion any time a new peal of laughter erupted from Sasha's room. After months of sweating the details of our transition to the White House, I felt a gush of relief. It was a sign of normalcy, a kind of watershed moment for our family. Friends were in the house. Danielle, meanwhile, had been sweating her own details. She'd been given detailed drop-off and pick-up instructions for the playdate via email from one of my aides. And she'd been asked, as all visitors were, to submit her Social Security number and license plate information days in advance to the Secret Service so the Secret Service could clear her entry onto the grounds. Just getting a child to our doorstep was a process. Danielle was trying to play it cool, like it was no big thing that her third grader had been invited to run around the president's home on a Saturday. Years later, she told me that knowing she'd be driving the family car up the stately access road that rings the massive south lawn of the White House, she had gone out and gotten it washed. She'd also gotten her hair done and her nails, never mind that the instructions had made clear that she wouldn't be setting foot outside the car. I was still trying to adjust, still wrestling with how to build as much realness into our lives as possible, when at the end of the playdate, I decided to walk little Olivia downstairs so I could say hello to her mom. This was a breach of protocol, as a White House usher would normally escort visitors to and from. But I had my own version of normal, which involved ending playdates by greeting a child's parent and giving them a report on how things had gone. Walking out into the sunlight with Olivia that day, I saw Danielle sitting inside her freshly washed, highly buffed car, trying to take in what was happening as a heavily armed Secret Service counter-assault team materialized from nowhere. "Hey there," I called, motioning for her to get out of the car. Danielle paused, eyeballing the guards clad in helmets and black battle dress, recalling the officers at the gate who had specifically and firmly instructed her to remain in the vehicle at all times, ma'am, and then very, very slowly opened the car door and got out. As I remember, the two of us chatted for just a few minutes that first day, but it took only that long for me to have a sense of what Danielle might be like as a friend. I started sitting next to her when I went to the girls' basketball games, and soon after that I asked her to come hang out with me the next time Olivia came over to play. I was aware that anything I said to a new person could be fed outward to others. Any impression I made or casual comment I dropped, positive or negative, accurate or not, could become a story to tell. It was yet another thing I understood but didn't love about this new existence. My private life had a certain currency. Was I a bad mother, a bratty, fit-pitching first lady? Did I really love my husband? Did he really love me? There were people out there always eager for proof that we were somehow a sham. I knew we couldn't afford a single stumble, an ounce of misinterpretation. It wasn't exactly easy to lower my guard, not only with Danielle, but with anyone new who came into my life during this time. But I also understood what would happen if I didn't. I knew I'd end up feeling isolated, a little paranoid, and stuck in place with a limited view of the world outside my walls. If I didn't drop my fears and open myself to new friends and new people, it would impact my ability to engage in my children's lives in a normal way. Staying open to people felt to me like a vital part of my new job. I don't know at what point Danielle grew comfortable enough to quit getting her car washed and her hair done ahead of our visits, but it started to matter less what sort of impression was being made. Slowly, we shifted into realness, happy to sit on the couch with our shoes kicked off. Each time we got together, we dropped our guards a little bit more, finding the same unself-conscious rhythms our daughters had during the hours they spent playing with Polly Pockets or climbing trees on the south lawn. Danielle and I laughed more easily, spoke more earnestly about our feelings. The risks diminished. I was safe with her, and she was safe with me. We were friends now, and would stay that way. And from Better Homes and Gardens, celebrate Shamrock Central. Oxalis, that's O-X-A-L-I-S, known as the shamrock plant for its clover-like leaves, stars in a spring planter. Start with a shallow bowl lined with pebbles and filled with potting mix. If it has no drainage hole, take care not to overwater. Just off-center, add one purple and one green oxalis. Sprinkle three trailing baby's tears around the perimeter. Fill in with two striated inch plants. A viola in the middle lends color, so a planter can take you through St. Paddy's Day and past Easter. Very cute looking. From Millie, five ways to give the gift of money. Now that Americans rely less on paper currency, the classic holiday card designed for giving cash is no longer a fail-safe presence. This year, consider these alternative ways to fund festively, guaranteed to be fast for you. rewarding for them and not awkward for everyone involved. Number one, start or contribute to a Roth IRA. These individual retirement accounts are tax-advantaged in two ways. They grow tax-free, and funds can be withdrawn tax-free after age 59 and a half. Plus, account holders can own and contribute to them even if they also have or eventually acquire a 401k. Two, fund an education savings account. Unless the recipient in question is your child, you probably won't make the complicated decision about which kind of account to use, but you can contribute to it or otherwise give money to a child's parents so they can make the deposit. Three, send a festive Venmo. Finally, Venmo has made the payment experience more fun. You can choose from a variety of animated gift wrap designs for no additional charge. Four, give globally. Got a loved one overseas? Revolut converts American dollars into 30-plus currencies and gives you 10 free international transfers per month. It's called Revolut, R-E-V-O-L-U-T. And five, donate to a cause. Sending money to an organization your recipient cares about is a win-win-win. It's a great gift that's good for the cause and may also help with your taxes. From Real Simple, the books list. Top picks for every taste. They've got five options here. Coming of Age Tearjerker. Shelley Reed is the author, R-E-A-D. Debut novel centers on Victoria Nash, a tough-as-nails teenager who runs the household on her family's peach farm in the 1940s Colorado. She instantly connects with a young native man passing through town, but when their relationship is brutally cut short, she's forced to escape to a small shack in the mountains. With gorgeous descriptions of the great outdoors, an illicit love story, and an unforgettable protagonist, Go as a River is the book, offers something for everyone. Next, a courageous memoir. In the early 2000s, Laura Cathart Robbins was a budding author, had two young kids, and was married to one of the most powerful men in Hollywood. She was also severely addicted to pills. When she decided to get sober, she couldn't find any quitlet books that reflected her experience as a black woman. Her remarkably candid memoir, Stash, My Life in Hiding, and again her last name Robbins, R-O-B-B-I-N-S, fills that void, revealing how her race, self-image, and privilege influenced her addiction and eventual triumph over it. A literary thriller in I Have Some Questions for You, the new novel by Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award finalist Rebecca Makkai, M-A-K-K-A-I. Bodie Kane is an accomplished film professor and podcaster who returns to her New England boarding school after 20-plus years to teach a two-week class. Once on campus, she can't stop thinking about the 1995 murder of a former classmate. Delving into the case and the perhaps wrongful conviction of the school's athletic trainer, she wonders if she actually knows something that could help solve the mystery. Fun page-turner. When Sasha, a middle-class Rhode Islander, marries Cord Stockton, the only son of old money New Yorkers, they move into the Brooklyn Heights brownstone where he was raised. She quickly discovers she can't change anything. Not the furniture, not the ugly drapes, and most of all, not her in-laws, who are contending with plenty of drama of their own. Every single character bursts off the page, seriously. Pineapple Street is the book by Jenny Jackson, J-A-C-K-S-O-N, is just the right witty, entertaining story to usher in spring. And a piece of historical fiction, The House of Eve, by Sadika Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N. Set in the 1950s, features two women whose lives are on vastly different trajectories. Eleanor is determined to succeed at Howard University in Washington, D.C., where she's fallen for a member of one of the city's elite black families. Ruby is a brilliant 15-year-old in Philadelphia, desperate to escape her upbringing and become the first in her family to go to college. As both women navigate tough choices and sacrifices, their paths unexpectedly cross, making for a riveting and relatable read. From Magnolia, The Space Between. The time that is the space between the beginning and the end of something. Time, always measured, always quantified, sometimes labeled good times, bad times, happy times, sad times, sometimes identified by the big, monumental, mark-it-on-the-calendar kind of times, but then other times feel in between, the pending time, the not-yet time, the patiently waiting time, the time that is the space between the beginning and the end of something. Planting the seed and reaping the harvest, casting the line and reeling in the big one, grinding the beans and taking the first sip, having the dream and seeing its magic played out, charting the course and reaching the summit, paddling out and riding the waves, starting the oven and buttering the bread, saying hello and living happily ever after, reading the first line and finishing the story. It is here in the mundane and in the not yet and in the unknown, as we patiently wait for what's to come, when things begin shifting. The stories we'll someday tell are being written. Life is unfolding and lessons are being learned. And I bet you more times than not, when we look back, it'll be this place, this space, this moment in time we waited for all along. By Magnolia, we've got Eggs Benedict. Several ways. In an East Coast kitchen over 100 years ago, a culinary genius split an English muffin, toasted and buttered the cut sides, added a wedge of ham and poached egg, and dressed it all with creamy, buttery hollandaise. While there are different claims about who made the first iteration of Eggs Benedict, one thing is certain. It's been a beloved breakfast staple ever since. You can make a batch of the original for your next big brunch, or serve up a refreshed recipe with a simple swap of ingredients. Start with the basics, a poached egg. Combine 4 cups water, 1 tablespoon white vinegar, and a pinch of salt in a large saucepan. Bring to boiling, reduce heat to a gentle simmer. Meanwhile, crack an egg into a small bowl. Gently swirl the boiling water in a circle to create a whirlpool. Slide egg into the whirlpool, and using a spoon, continue to gently swirl the water. This will help keep the egg white from feathering. Turn off heat under the pan, cover pan, and let cook 5 minutes. Use a slotted spoon to transfer egg to a paper towel lined plate. The Hollandaise sauce. We need 4 large egg yolks, 1.5 tablespoons fresh lemon juice, 1 tablespoon water, 3/4 cup, that's 1.5 sticks, salted butter, melted, a pinch of cayenne pepper, and a pinch of ground white pepper. Combine the yolks, lemon juice, and the water in a small stainless steel bowl or the top of a double boiler. Nest the bowl over a pot of simmering water. The bowl should not touch the water, and whisk until the egg yolks thicken and double in volume. Whisking constantly, add the butter in a slow, steady stream and cook until the sauce thickens and increases in volume 3 to 4 minutes. Add the cayenne and the white pepper. Taste and add more lemon juice if needed. Remove pan from heat. Leave the bowl over the water to keep the sauce warm. Tip: keep your hollandaise between 120 and 145 degrees to maintain a smooth consistency and prevent the sauce from separating. So, classic Eggs Benedict, you build it by using a toasted English muffin on the bottom, fried Canadian bacon, then your poached egg, then your hollandaise, and then we garnish with chopped fresh parsley and paprika. And it said for a berry, I can't read it, it's a twist on the classic, try the casserole, which I'll be getting to in a minute. For Magnolia Tables Eggs Benedict, you do a biscuit half on the bottom, cooked peppered bacon, poached egg, your hollandaise, some microgreens, chopped fresh chives, sliced green onion, or chopped fresh parsley. The Eggs Benedict casserole that was just spoken of. Prep time, 20 minutes. Bake time, an hour. It makes 12 to 14 servings. We need a half cup or 1 stick salted butter cut into half-inch cubes, plus softened butter for the pan. 12 English muffins, torn or cut into 1.5-inch pieces. 10 ounces Canadian bacon, cut into 1.5-inch pieces. 18 large eggs, 1.5 cups milk, 1.5 cups heavy cream, 1.5 teaspoons garlic powder, 1.5 teaspoons kosher salt, 1.5 teaspoons freshly ground black pepper, 1/2 teaspoon sweet paprika, 2 tablespoons chopped fresh parsley. And for the sauce, 8 large egg yolks, 3 tablespoons fresh lemon juice, 2 tablespoons water, 1.5 cups, that's 3 sticks, salted butter, melted, pinch cayenne pepper, and a pinch ground white pepper. Preheat oven to 375. Generously butter a deep 13 by 9 inch baking pan. Scatter English muffin pieces over the bottom of the pan. Scatter cubed butter and Canadian bacon over English muffin pieces. Whisk together eggs, milk, cream, garlic powder, salt, and black pepper in a large bowl. Pour over the mixture in the pan to completely cover, and then cover with foil. Bake 30 minutes. Uncover, sprinkle paprika over the top. Bake 30 minutes more or until set and lightly browned. Meanwhile, for the hollandaise sauce, combine yolks, lemon juice, and the water in a medium stainless steel bowl or the top of a double boiler. Nest the bowl over a pot of simmering water and whisk until the egg yolks thicken and double in volume. Whisking constantly, add the butter in a slow, steady stream. Cook till the sauce thickens and increases in volume 3 to 4 minutes. Add both peppers. Taste and add more lemon juice if needed. Remove from heat, but leave the bowl over the water to keep warm. Then pour some of the hollandaise over the casserole, sprinkle with additional paprika and parsley. Serve immediately, passing the remaining hollandaise like you would gravy around the table. A couple of other options to make an Eggs Benedict. For your bottom part, use your toasted whole grain bread. then smashed avocado, then the poached egg, then the hollandaise, and top with chopped fresh chives and smoked paprika. And a hash brown option, instead of using any kind of a bread on the bottom, use crisp cooked hash browns. Then a sausage patty, the poached egg, the hollandaise, sautéed red bell pepper and onion, and cracked black pepper. Now I'm hungry. From Woman's Day, fresh lemonade. 15 minutes is your total time, plus chilling, and it makes 8 servings. We need 1 cup of sugar, 1.5 cups fresh lemon juice from about 10 lemons, plus lemon slices or wedges for serving. In a small saucepan, combine sugar with 1 cup water and bring to a boil. Reduce heat and simmer. Do not stir until sugar dissolves, 3 to 4 minutes. Remove from heat and let cool completely. In a large pitcher, combine lemon juice, cooled sugar syrup, and 4 cups cold water. Taste lemonade for tartness. If too tart, add 1 to 2 cups more cold water. Keep in mind that you'll want to add ice, which will dilute the lemonade. Refrigerate until chilled. Before serving, thinly slice or cut into wedges 2 lemons, stir into the lemonade, and then add ice. For a minty mix-up, for a twist on classic lemonade, make 2 lemon mint slushies by placing 1.5 cups of the lemonade, 1/4 cup fresh mint leaves, and 2 cups ice in a blender. Blend until ice is crushed and mixture is combined. And a Woman's Day test kitchen tip, freeze some lemonade in ice cube trays and add the cubes to your pitcher or glasses later. Unlike regular ice cubes, these won't dilute your lemonade. Also from Woman's Day, zesty lemon herb baked flounder. Active time 15 minutes, total time is 25, and it serves 4. We need 1.25 pounds flounder fillets, kosher salt and pepper, 1 medium lemon thinly sliced, 3 tablespoons melted butter, 1/2 cup Italian seasoned croutons, chopped flat leaf parsley for sprinkling. Heat oven to 450. In a 3-quart baking dish, arrange flounder fillets in a single layer, seasoned with 1/4 teaspoon each salt and pepper. Top with lemon slices. Drizzle with butter. Bake until fish just turns opaque in the center, 12 to 15 minutes. Pulse croutons in food processor until coarsely crushed. Sprinkle over flounder. Garnish with chopped parsley. And their kitchen tip, is your fishmonger fresh out of flounder? Substitute similarly mild and flat fillets, such as tilapia, sole, or red snapper. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Ladies Magazine. Be sure and listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jean Latshaw, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Ladies Magazine is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.